Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon, just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, a production of iHeartRadio.
Hello, and welcome to Stuff to Blow Your Mind, listener mail. My name is Joe McCormick. My regular co-host, Robert Lamb, is not with me today, so in an unusual twist, I'm going to be doing today's episode solo. But for all of the people who have inquired, nothing weird's going on. Rob and I just had a couple of awkwardly timed back-to-back vacations, and we're about to be coming back into recognizable form. So I'm going to be doing a core episode of the show tomorrow with a special guest, and then later on this week, Rob and I will both be back and ready to chase that fairy fire into the bogs of October. So I guess with that, I'll jump right into some of your messages. This first batch came in response to our series on the Black Death and religious responses to the Second Plague pandemic. I think first I'm going to read this message from Livia. Livia writes, "Dear Robert and Joe, hi, my name is Livia and I'm a big fan of the show. I was particularly excited to listen to your recent episodes on God and the Black Death, as I did some research on that topic in college. I was actually in the middle of researching it right as our own plague hit in March of 2020. And she actually attaches a part of a short paper that she wrote on the subject, but then explains, quote, "My basic argument is that the poor reaction of religious authorities in Europe to the Black Death caused a widespread loss of faith in the church, which created an opportunity for new spiritual leaders like mystics to gain followings. This end to the hegemony of the church, combined with the rise of new, more individual-focused forms of Christian spirituality, ultimately paved the way to the Protestant Reformation." And then she recommends a book that she found helpful on this subject called From the Brink of Apocalypse by an author named John Aberth. And then finishes by saying, "That aside, thank you both for creating such a great podcast. I actually enjoy doing laundry and dishes because it's an excuse to listen to you guys. I really look forward to part three of the series. All the best, Livia." Well, Livia, as always, thank you for the kind words and thanks for getting in touch. I don't know enough about this subject to have a strong opinion on whether the Black Death weakened the authority of the Catholic Church and whether it was truly a determining factor in the Protestant Reformation. It does seem plausible, though. Then again, it got the gears turning in my head and made me think about how, though this is not in particular a counter-argument against the claim you're making about the second plague pandemic in the Catholic Church, it did get me thinking about how things like faith in a religious institution don't always react to external inputs in predictable ways. And the main example that came to my mind is a famous book in 20th century psychology called When Prophecy Fails, a social and psychological study of a modern group that predicted the destruction of the world. This was a book by three co-authors, Leon Festinger, Henry Ryken, and Stanley Schachter. And this is a somewhat different issue, different than the example of the plague, or at least a different type of undermining of religious authority. But it did make me think about studies of what happens when religious expectations for external events are not fulfilled. So this book was originally published in 1956. We talked about Leon Festinger in some episode that we did recently. He's known for promoting the theory of cognitive dissonance, where a mismatch between between the beliefs that you hold versus your observation of the external world causes a state of discomfort that you will seek to resolve through rather radical means. And in this specific example, the authors here studied a small UFO cult whose leader claimed to be receiving messages from another planet. And this cult predicted on the basis of these messages that there was going to be an apocalyptic flood that would destroy human civilization in the year 1954. And of course, it didn't happen. Yet some members of the cult not only continued believing in the messages and in the cult authority structure, but increased their dedication to the cult with rationalizations about the mismatch between their predictions and observed reality. And their increased dedication was measured through things like even more preaching, public preaching and sharing of the cult's message. And I know there's been some later criticism of the author's methodology in this book. For example, I think how their documentation of the cult might have actually influenced the behavior of the members. So I think this is not without its critics. But given that we can observe lots of other instances similar to this, I think there's still probably something useful to be learned from the explanation that the authors gave here, which is basically that when the cult members were faced with extremely uncomfortable cognitive dissonance, and this dissonance would be caused by the mismatch between I predicted X would happen, I predicted there would be an apocalyptic flood, versus I observed that in fact not X happened, that Y happened, that there was no apocalyptic flood. And because they had already sacrificed so much on the basis of that prediction, so you can think of those in multiple ways, they may have sacrificed wealth, social capital, and so forth. One natural way to alleviate that excruciating dissonance is to double down. So you double down on the original belief, you believe it even more strongly, you preach it even more fervently, thereby potentially adding new believers and increasing the faith of other believers, and thus increasing social support within the cult belief structure. Now, as I mentioned earlier, these are clearly two very different ways that a religious authority could be potentially undermined, one by making predictions that don't come true, and the other by simply failing to be able to do anything about the cataclysmic human suffering caused by the second plague pandemic. But I can see some parallels, and so I wonder. I think you could well be correct in your characterization that the second plague pandemic led to a series of social outcomes that undermined faith in the Catholic Church, led to these alternative forms of spirituality, maybe more individually focused, and eventually paved the way to the Protestant Reformation. That does seem quite plausible, though. I don't know. I also do find it very interesting how things like religious faith and faith in the authority of religious institutions doesn't always react to external events in a way that's strictly predictable from the outside. All right, this next message comes to us from Ed. Ed is also reacting to the plague series, and he says, "Hi guys, while listening to your series on the plague, images in a montage in the 1936 film Things to Come kept coming to mind. As you may recall, after civilization is destroyed in never-ending wars," I think he means in the movie, "plagues ravage the world. What do you think of the film? Thanks, Ed." And this one definitely caught my interest because I'd never seen this movie before. I don't think I was even aware of it. If I was, I'd forgotten about it. But I looked it up, and it does indeed look fascinating. So this is a British science fiction movie from 1936 written by H.G. Wells, who we talked about in the Weird House Cinema episode on Time After Time. But it was based on a book that he wrote called The Shape of Things to Come, which I have not read, but which seems to operate as a kind of speculative future history. So it's a book that spans multiple generations of time beyond the horizon of Wells or the filmmakers. And so the broad outline is that Wells predicted a global war would break out in 1940 and rage for decades after that, so partially prescient there, and that the war would be so brutal and devastating that it would cause the world to descend into a new dark age, especially because toward the end of the conflict, the belligerents turned from conventional weapons to biological weapons, unleashing new forms of disease and plague that kill something like half the people on Earth. And after this, all government falls away and the world descends into anarchy and barbarism, and everybody lives in this warlord hell of plague Vikings. Eventually, though, the Earth is saved by some sort of international coalition of, strangely, pilots and engineers. They're called Wings Over the World, and they're based out of a hub in Iraq, and they fly around reestablishing order, they outlaw war, they rebuild lost scientific and technological capability so that its benefits can be spread to all of the people of the planet. And I thought it was interesting here that Wells identified airplanes as one of the technologies primarily associated with future progress. So there's also a thing in the movie where there's a final section set far in the future and the inhabitants of Earth are planning a mission to the moon, which I guess is another extension of the air travel principle taken to the next level. And I don't know, I thought it was curious that we do in science fiction today still associate space travel with sort of the cutting edge of future technology. One of the things that is emblematic of technological progress overall, but not so much for air travel. If a similar future history were written today, I wonder if it would be, instead of pilots, who would be the people who come in to try to reestablish order. I don't know if it would be IT professionals or something. But anyway, so poking around a bit in the movie, I have not watched the whole thing, but it does look really interesting. And at some point, I guess things are supposed to be taking place in the far future and everybody's dressed in, they're living in a technological utopia, but everybody is also dressed in medieval tunics. And so they look kind of like Bunny Breckenridge in Plan 9 from Outer Space, which I found funny, but definitely looks like it is worth a watch.
Today's episode is brought to you by eBay. eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then, through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. If you haven't heard of Visible, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 a month, every month. Taxes and fees included. Having a one-line plan means you only need you to save. No estranged roommates, exes, cousins twice removed, or AI-powered humanoid robots needed. And because $25 a month really means $25 a month, you can call, text, stream, whatever, as much as you want without worrying about getting dinged at the end of the month.
No hidden fees, no surprises. No, really. It's like the old saying goes, you can't judge a book by its cover, but you can judge a company by its name. So spread the word. Tell all your friends there's a wireless company out there with transparency in their name, and they're called Visible. Start saving on wireless today at visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan for data management practices and additional terms, visit visible.com.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road, the steeper the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Today's episode is brought to you by Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast. When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There's still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, one more message in response to the Black Death episodes. This one came in from our listener Zbigniew, and this was a really good clarification that's worth pointing out. So Zbigniew got in touch to say that comment on when we were talking in the third plague episode about anti-Semitic conspiracy theories that arose in Christian Europe during the Black Death. So there would be these mass delusions that Jews had somehow caused the plague epidemics by poisoning wells, and this led to massacres of Jewish people and communities throughout Europe. And we mentioned something about how there have been more recent echoes at least, of this type of thinking, in which people falsely accuse minority groups, sometimes specifically Jews, of causing infectious disease. And Rob mentioned, I think what he said was a Polish poster from World War II blaming Jews for typhus. And Zbigniew wrote in to emphasize that though this poster was written in Polish, it was a German Nazi poster that was hung up in Nazi-occupied Poland, and this is why it was written in Polish. And yeah, that's very good to point out, if that was unclear to anyone. The poster was Polish in the sense that it was in the Polish language, not a poster of Polish origin. So thank you very much for that clarification, Zbigniew. All right, now I think I'm going to be moving on from responses to the Black Death series, and I'm going to read a message from our listener, Raj. Raj says, "Hello, gentlemen. I know you've received many emails regarding mirrors, but here is one more to add to the wall. I was working out recently and was on a stationary bike that happened to be facing a window. Since it was early in the morning and the lights in the studio were not too bright, I could easily see my reflection in the window, thus acting as a pseudo mirror. Noticing this observation, my mind immediately went to your episodes regarding the mirror, and I then remembered a listener mail episode where Joe explained how mirrors work. I apologize for not remembering the specifics, but it had something to do with the notion that mirrors reverse the image along the Z axis and not the X or Y axes. Yeah, I guess I'll interject here if this helps to give a quick refresher. I was answering a question about why a mirror appears to flip our image horizontally, so your left hand becomes your reflection's right hand, even though it's still the image of your left hand, but at the same time does not flip your image vertically. You don't seem to notice any equivalent phenomenon going on with reversal of your head and your feet. And my conclusion was actually that this impression we have about it reversing the horizontal axis but not the vertical is an illusion that's predicated on the fact that human bodies are horizontally symmetrical. And you can test this out a bit just by imagining that human bodies looked exactly the same, except they floated sideways in the air. So imagine a human body floating sideways. If it raises its left arm to its side, it's going to be pointing toward the ground. If it raises its right arm to the side, as if, you know, to the side as if doing a jumping jack, it's going to be pointing toward the sky. In this case, it would be exactly the opposite. If humans floated sideways like this, a mirror would appear to flip you vertically, but not horizontally. And so I think the most accurate way to describe what a mirror does to your image is neither horizontal nor vertical flipping. It's actually turning your image inside out. The mirror reverses your image along the axis of depth, a distance from the mirror, not height or width. And human bodies just happen to be constructed in such a way that an inside-out image of our front-facing side is confusing like this. So you raise your left hand, and your reflection raises the hand that would be the right hand if it was another person looking at you from your mirror image's position, but it is the image still of your left hand. And so this is just not something we encounter in everyday life anywhere except looking into a mirror, so it kind of short-circuits the brain. Anyways, Raj continues, I was recalling this memory while I happened to be looking at my reflected feet, and all of a sudden my feet looked as if they were pedaling backwards. Not only that, I then began to feel as if I were physically pedaling backwards. I tried to make sense of this, but trying to reconcile my confused perception with trying to understand how mirrors work, all while keeping up with my workout, was too mentally taxing, and I ultimately had to look away from my reflection to reorient myself. Looking back to this moment, I'm still not sure what happened, and trying to make sense of it just invokes more confusion. But in the end, it's still a comical memory to think about, and so I thought I'd share it with you. Well, Raj, I don't know exactly what to make of that. That's very interesting, and I'd be interested if other listeners have insights on what's going on here. It almost seems like a combination of the way mirrors mess with our heads, but then also, I don't actually know what the name for it is, but the optical illusion where there is the twirling ballerina and you can see it twirling either direction. It appears to twirl either clockwise or counterclockwise, depending on just sort of nothing changes about the animation. It's just the way your brain sees it. You can look that up and find the name of it if you're trying to figure out what I'm talking about. But ultimately, I don't know. Yeah, that's very curious. So Raj goes on. Moving on, I was thinking about odd-oddles one day, as one does, and I thought to myself, that would be a pretty cool weapon to wield in D&D. I don't recall D&D being brought up in the odd-oddle episode, but it made me wonder if it was an actual item. It turns out it exists in both D&D and Pathfinder, some of which are canon and some are homebrew extensions. I'm not sure where or how I'd be able to fit the odd-oddle in any of my current D&D or Pathfinder campaigns, but I'm excited at the prospect of being able to use it. I wonder if either of you have considered using it in any of your campaigns. Well, Raj, this would be fun to ask Rob about once he gets back. We may have to revisit this in the next listener mail episode if we were called to bring it up. But I have not used it. I don't know. That seems like a weapon for a brawnier and more courageous character than mine, who is mostly a liar and a coward. I have not gotten around to the odd-a-lottle use yet, but maybe in the future. Anyway, moving on to Raj's last point about whispering weapons. Raj says, another great episode, and once again, another tie-in to D&D. In one of the campaigns I'm playing in, one of the players got his sword as part of a loot. Since that player's character doesn't use swords, my character eventually got his hands on it. Shortly afterward, my character started to hear a voice in his head, and it was the sword. My mind immediately went to your episode on the whispering sword, so I asked it what its name was. It replied that no one had ever thought to ask it that question, so it didn't have a name. So, like with any great weapon, I'll have to give it a name, though admittedly that's still a work in progress. More excitement abounds, as I might have to go back and re-listen to that episode and get some inspiration on how to roleplay with this new item. Thanks as always for the wonderful content, keep up the great work, cheers, Raj. Well, Raj, thanks as always for writing in, and very intriguing about the sword. You'll have to keep us updated on how it turns out. Though I would be slow to trust a sword that speaks. I'm not quite sure why. Okay, maybe one last message here about Weird House Cinema. And a warning, the following email contains some Gaelic that I'm sure I'm going to fail at pronouncing. This is from Aaron. Aaron says, "Hi, Robert and Joe. Dia Duit from Ireland. I have to say that I think Weird House Cinema is probably my favorite offering from your good selves. If I haven't seen the film being discussed, I normally listen to the first part of the podcast to see if it's something I'd be interested in watching. It usually is, much to the dismay of my wife. Then I'll listen to the rest of the podcast after watching the film, or more often just start the whole thing over from the beginning. My favorite part of the podcast is usually the plot breakdown section. It can be interesting to see what strange moments you pick out to talk about, and I sometimes find myself laughing out loud if we notice the same things, such as the young fella's nail collection in the Russian space movie." Teens in the Universe. That was a good one. Aaron says, "I found this section, I guess the plot breakdown, conspicuous in its absence from your cast about time after time. I really enjoyed the film and was looking forward to the plot summary, but this didn't occur, and instead you were careful to avoid any spoilers. Is this a new direction you're heading in? I hope not, because your take on the proceedings in some seriously crazy films can be hilariously entertaining. I hope this doesn't come across as being overly critical. I really enjoy listening to you two rambling on about stuff I would genuinely never consider in a million years. I especially like the October Monster stuff and the promise of a new anthology of horror episode. Anyway, all the best. Slán agus beannacht, Aaron." Oh, and then finally Aaron says, "P.S. One of the bits I hoped you'd mention in Time After Time was the bit where Malcolm McDowell hailed the cab by imitating the woman doing it before him. I must have rewound that part about 12 times. Malcolm McDowell could be seriously funny when he wanted to be." Well, Aaron, no, this is not a general direction. I think we'll just go case by case. And some movies seem like it would be more fun to break down the plot in detail. I know we've got one coming up this week where we go into great detail. I think it may be maybe our longest Weird House yet, because we got so wrapped up talking about it. But yeah, with others, it just feels more appropriate to talk about the movie from a higher altitude. So, or sometimes somewhere in between. It just depends on the movie. Well, one last short message before we go. This will be from Tom. Subject line: Tom Bombadil. These, of course, keep pouring in, and Tom suggests a so far unique one. We've not heard this one yet. The pick is Elton John. Very interesting. You know, these casting choices never cease to amaze me. Yeah. Okay. I'm a big fan of the Tumbleweed Connection, in which Elton John, it was one of his earlier albums, in which he sort of performs as a cowboy. I don't know if that's too far off from becoming a sort of a jolly god of the woods. So yeah, I can see it. Anyway, I guess that's going to close things out for this episode, but hey, stay tuned for the rest of the week. There is going to be, I'm going to do a core episode with a special guest tomorrow. And then later in the week after that, Rob's going to be back. We'll rejoin me for some great October content that we've been excited about all year. So stick around and keep listening. You can, of course, if you're not subscribed to this podcast, you can find it probably anywhere you get podcasts. It is the Stuff to Blow Your Mind podcast. We do a number of different episodes in our daily offerings today. So on Mondays, we do listener mail episodes like this one, though usually Rob is here with me. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, we do core episodes, which are our classic style episodes. They tend to be usually focused around science and science intersecting with other cultural topics. On Wednesdays, we tend to do an episode called The Artifact, which is a short form series, usually sub 10 minutes and focused on a particular object, idea, or moment in time. And then on Fridays, we do Weird House Cinema. Rob and I both love strange movies, and that's our time to talk about them. And then on Saturdays, you will get a Vault episode, an older episode of the show that we've selected to rerun. So if you're not subscribed to the podcast, please do subscribe. Thanks, as always, to our wonderful audio producer, Seth Nicholas Johnson. And if you would like to get in touch with us with feedback on this episode or any other, to suggest a topic for the future, or just to say hello, you can email us at contact@stufftoblowyourmind.com.
Stuff to Blow Your Mind is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
Today's episode is brought to you by Visible. The future of wireless is here, and it's transparent. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees, no surprises, no, really.
What are you waiting for? Get with the times and switch to Visible at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light. Catch all 7 rounds, 3 days, live from Detroit. April 25th to 27th with NFL Network Draft coverage presented by Verizon. And on ABC, ESPN, ESPN Deportes, and streaming on NFL Plus. It all starts Thursday, April 25th at 8 p.m. Eastern. Visit NFL.com/draft for more information. Rocket Mortgage, official partner of the NFL Draft.
You're a growing business, which means you need every spare hour you can find. That's why the most successful growing businesses are working together in Slack. Slack is where work happens, with all your people, data, and information in one AI-powered place. Start a call instantly in huddles and ditch cumbersome calendar invites. Or build an automation with Workflow Builder to take routine tasks off your plate. No coding required. Grow your business in Slack. Visit slack.com to get started.